Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. April will feature Righteous Felon Beef Jerky with flavors like Shea, Potle, Guevara, and Habanero Escobar. Expand laces, because who doesn't want to turn every shoe into a slip-on? At least sometimes. You'll also get a copy of Daddy Stop Talking and a bottle of your choice. Prep your mail's box, because Adam's Monthly Nut is on its way.
Well, in this episode, we get all over the George Floyd trial. Mark is animated, man, and in studio, so be prepared. And we get into Burbank City Council and Tin Horn Flats, and also crazy story about a couple attorneys with a Molotov cocktail who got busted in New York. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, right? Well, then what about your auto? What about the policy for your automotive? And then how about you bundle that up at Geico? Oh, it's a good thing, because Geico makes it so easy for you to get your bundle going. You got enough to do around the house, so save time, save money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save and how easy Geico could make it when you bundle at geico.com.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but get it on. I'm going fast because we got so much to do. Mark Garagus is in studio. Welcome to Reasonable Doubt. Best hour or so in the universe. Mark is here, and he's loaded for bear.
It's quite a week this week. I don't even know where to begin. You know, I'm going to I've been almost schizophrenic or of two minds about the Chauvin trial. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. Obviously, for a living, I pursue excessive force, wrongful death, killings against cops. And for decades, I was a criminal defense lawyer. Almost exclusively, but obviously my practice now tilts more towards suing police departments and fighting qualified immunity and across the country. But there's something about this trial that really is, as much as I like a good, you know, cop beatdown as much as anybody, the problem I foresee with this is when you watch this trial, the demonization of the defense lawyer always – I mean, that goes with any kind of high-profile case. The defense lawyer is like, how could he say this? How could he do that? Blah, blah, blah. And look, I
– Are you talking about the coverage of the trial?
The coverage of the trial, exactly.
Right.
In fact, I was talking to a news anchor yesterday off the record, so I will not disclose who it was, but – the person was saying they can't even find a defense lawyer who will come on and talk about what the defense lawyer is doing without denigrating the defense lawyer. And the problem with this is there are so many instances. I don't understand. I'm just guessing. Have you noticed when they – you haven't watched any of it, have you?
I've watched some of it.
Okay.
I watched the opening statement.
They have – yeah, the opening statement. Well, when they're doing testimony by witnesses, you'll notice sometimes that they go into kind of a white noise situation where they cover up their faces and then they're talking, you know, what we would traditionally call a sidebar, but it's not really a – it's a virtual sidebar. I can't imagine that somebody – at least of all, the judge isn't saying, how is this relevant? Why is this coming in? Why aren't you objecting to it? Because when you start asking the witnesses How did you feel about this? How did it make you feel? And there's a cathartic release, and people are – I understand everybody, you know, who watches that, there is an emotional resonance with you can't believe the cop did this. But at the same time, fast forward. If this is the way we allow evidence in against the cop, next time I'm doing some pro bono case where I'm defending some poor kid or a juvenile who's being tried as an adult somewhere, and if this is the standard of evidence that comes in, it's frightening to me for cases where there are people who are going to get railroaded. So be careful what you wish for here, because there is a bad precedent that is set. Now,
Can you explain what's going on with the sidebar and the hushed tones?
Well, the sidebar, I assume, and once again, this is pure rank speculation because you can't hear it and they're not releasing it. But I assume that either the defense lawyer is saying, objection, Your Honor, this is irrelevant. We shouldn't be doing this. I want to preserve my record. Or the judge is saying, wait a second here, Ms. Prosecutor, Madam Prosecutor, Mr. Prosecutor, why is this relevant? Why isn't this what the legal term is, cumulative? Why are we asking about people's feelings and their emotions and things like that? I heard somebody – I mean, so there must be some discussion of that, unless they're angling for a conviction and an ineffective assistance of counsel. But the explanation that I've been given, because nobody talks about this, is, well – this particular state, Minnesota, has sentencing guidelines. Under the sentencing guidelines, you have to prove facts to a jury in order to get enhanced penalties. Well, guess what? If I'm the defense lawyer, I don't need to prove facts about children being affected by this, to have three kids up there crying on the stand in front of the jury talking about how it affected them. That, to me, you're asking – to get your – I mean, it's a slow plea, so to speak, or a slow sentencing. And it just – the public will see this, and the public, I think, has already misread it. In fact, the pundits, I think, have not commented on it, and it's incredibly frustrating.
Right. So that stuff's not relevant. I mean, you being sad – or not being able to sleep that night, or if it is relevant, it's not relevant times five witnesses.
Well, times five witnesses. How about the guy who sold the cigarettes who called 911? I felt bad for the kid. Of course he feels bad. If he had known that by calling the police, George Floyd was going to be dead, he never would have called the police. I get it. I'm there. But that, why should the jurors be hearing that in deciding the guilt or innocence? And by the way, if you say, well, fuck that guy Floyd, I hope he gets convicted. I mean, fuck that guy Chauvin, I hope he gets convicted. Okay, I get it. You're a cheerleader for the prosecution. However, if it's your brother, your father, or somebody else that gets arrested someday, like – you know, poor Lucas Lepegin in Burbank at Tin Horn Flats.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But I'm saying, if you're charged with a crime and you're sitting next to me in a courtroom and you say, or your loved one is, and you say, well, how is this relevant? How is this coming in? And I say, well, you were a cheerleader when it was somebody you despised. But right. Remember, you can get hoisted on that same petard.
All right. So let's break it down a little. First, going back to the Weinstein trial.
The problem with these super-sized trials, which absolutely should be televised, is the judges, you know, I liked this judge, but, and I know he's trying to stay out of it, and everybody's got this Lance Ito complex when it comes to televised trials. By the way,
Judge
Lance Ito,
right.
I've known Judge Ito since many years before, and since he was a DA, and he was one of the great judges and got, you know, kind of
lampooned. OJ trial, yeah. And it's sands through the hourglass. So are the days of our lives. All right, so a couple things. So we go back to the Weinstein trial.
Right.
When we talked about that, you had somebody in that courtroom, and you said it was a very different thing than what the news was reporting. And there's a danger here, because the news is fairly partisan, and they report what they want to report, and so they paint a different picture, as to what's going. Most people don't sit around and watch, you know, 19 hours a week of the trial. They turn on CNN that night. They get the take from the expert or from the pundit or whoever's hosting the show. They then goes a direction of a CNN direction or a direction MSNBC or ABC or whoever, a mainstream media sort of direction, which may not represent fully what's going on inside the courtroom. Well, and then later, when the guy gets acquitted or they reduce it to manslaughter or whatever it is, everyone is outraged because they've been watching the CNN version of the story. Is that a correct statement?
And let me add one other.
And then, by the way, now it's time to burn the city down because we've been getting the CNN version, and this is outrageous.
And I don't understand. It's almost as if the commentators, I don't understand. If you are somebody who self-identifies as a criminal defense lawyer, then just maybe have an asterisk and say, except when it comes to cops. I mean, because the cop is an accused. He is a defendant. I'm like I said, in effort of full disclosure, my practice is clearly more suing police departments and cops than it is the criminal defense at this point. But at the same time, when did the liberal, you know, the liberal media, the liberal orthodoxy become – you know, like Chelsea Handler, who I love and think is funny, she says she was quoted this week as saying if there's video or audio, there shouldn't be a trial. And she was serious. It was just like, and there were people who were going, yeah, yeah. So what the hell are you talking about?
Well, look, the same liberal are like, yeah, free speech is great, just not hate speech. I should be able to vet that. Do you understand that flies in the face of every liberal idea that's ever come before us? No trials, no speech.
I feel like I've been like the whole liberal orthodoxy has just left. I don't even understand. Since when do I have to embrace guys that I don't agree with on anything else, but at least they understand due process? I know, you know, there is the whole democracy. What separates us from every other banana-style republic. When people talk about the assault on January 6th and the insurrection and sedition and everything else, I got it. But guess what? That's against a constitution which you're defending. Well, if you're defending the Constitution, the thing that the founding fathers embraced the most was this idea of you're not going to have a king who's going to dictate. You're not going to have writs of assistance. You're not going to be entering people's houses. You're going to demand juries. You're going to demand juries in order to separate you out. What John Adams was a criminal defense lawyer who defended the British. Right. And can you imagine in today's day and age what the odds are on a criminal defense lawyer?
Well, it's getting to the point where the folks that even throw their hat into the ring to defend somebody who's on the wrong side of the woke mob, these people are getting doxxed and boycotted. And Chelsea Handler, is this the world you want to live in? And by the way, here's the deal. It doesn't stop. It keeps moving. So today, you know, well, we'll not have trials for people we have videotape of, but it is at some point we'll keep going way past that. And we're moving fast in that direction. And we've created this, you know, the problem is an intellectual honesty. Everyone is so afraid of being on the wrong side of an issue. You're not. I'm not. We are here to give our opinions, both sides, on an issue. And that's what you want. It's like, I don't want to see a guy calling a football game who's a huge Steelers fan and never gives any credit to the Baltimore Ravens when the Steelers are playing the Ravens. That's not what I'm tuned in to see. I want to see a guy knows the game, explaining when the Steelers screwed up and when they did good, and the same with Baltimore.
I know, we
jumped the shark.
You have absolutely hit the nail on the head. I cannot even watch commentary on it because it's as if they've co-opted, and there's this ideology, and people have forgotten that there's a system. I mean, one of the commentators actually told me at one point, I was thinking about this. One of the guys that had that has clinically lost his mind, who's commenting on this, had said when we were when Tina was representing Smollett, well, you never should have pushed for a dismissal. You should have just pled guilty, and then they wouldn't have retried. And I said, what country are you from? I mean, what constitution are you under? I understand we now have a COVID constitution, which means we set everything aside and judges completely abdicate their judicial role. But this is there. It's a dangerous the same people who are frightened, and I'm one of them, about overturning elections. How can you not be frightened about overturning constitutional protections? How is that not frightening to you?
Well, so you studied the trial, at least as of today. And what are we, 5 days in?
5 days in. And there was one thing that I missed that I wanted to ask Gary. Apparently, there was a witness who took the fifth. Did you find any of this, Gary?
Yeah, I did. His name is Moray Lester Hall. I might be mispronouncing his first name. He was one of the other passengers in the car when the cops made contact with him. And
made contact with George Floyd, who was asleep.
Correct. And at the time, there is video of him interacting with other officers as well. And in the days following George Floyd's death, he went on a media tour and went on Good Morning America talking about the experience of watching his friend die and how he planned to be George Floyd's voice going forward. And he has since had his lawyers submit to the court that he will be taking the Fifth Amendment if they call him. And they are basically filing a motion to ask them not to call him. And there is speculation online based on some previous charges that he had outstanding for a concealed firearm, possession of drugs, and a few others, that this gentleman may have in fact been George Floyd's drug dealer, and that's why he will be taking the fifth.
Let me give you another – because perfect setup, Gary. By the way, so the people understand, it's very rare to force a judge to give immunity. But you know who can give immunity and put him on the stand immediately? The prosecution. So we've got – parades of witnesses who are cathartically emoting on the stand, yet they're not going to give immunity to a witness who is right there, who has previously gone out and talked about it. Please explain that to me. And by the way, when you say, I don't care, I don't want to hear about it, it's going to be the defense doing this or that. Once again, I'm going to tell you something. This will make law, because if you get a conviction – and by the way, you're never going to get an acquittal. So everybody who's talking about, oh, it's going to be an acquittal, it's going to burn down – there's no acquittal that is coming. It's either – at best, it's a hung jury. Most likely on the bell curve, it's a guilty. And the fact is, then that means it will be appealed. Then that means that will be – they will affirm it. The Court of Appeal will affirm it, because we are living under the COVID constitution. And at that point, that's going to be the law. Guess what? That's going to then apply to all cases going forward. And by the way, cops never get tried for anything. So you've just made horrific law that's going to be applied to the very people who were the cheerleaders for the horrific law.
So let me summarize here for a second. The prosecutors, they have the 8.5 minute tape.
Correct.
And that's about all they have. That's enough, but that's kind of all they have. So all they can do is put up a parade of witnesses to talk about how bad they felt and how horrible this is. But there's not that much else for them to explore. They just sort of keep going back to the tape, right?
Right. Well, I mean, and look, you could have tried this case in probably 8 court days at most. I mean, and that includes jury selection. I know judges who would have made you, if this wasn't a high-profile case, they would have made you try this case in 8 days.
And how do you think the defense is doing?
Eric Nelson has got an uphill battle, obviously, I mean, that goes without saying. At the same time, I get so many people texting me and saying, I hate this guy. I hate his technique. I hate what he's doing. But the problem is, for him, he has to do what he's doing. He can't just phone it in. He can't say, well, the crowd is telling me that this guy is a piece of shit. My client's a piece of shit. So therefore, I'm going to phone it in. That's a scary, scary prospect.
Have we gotten into any medical evidence yet?
Yeah, they under the guise of the EMT, and then the fire captain was on. Yes, we're taping this on Friday. Fire captain was on yesterday, who talked about when he got there that they had already done a breathing tube, and there was
chest compressions.
Floyd was doing chest compressions with a Nerf ball style on the scene.
They also had on a bystander who they identified as an MMA fighter. I don't believe he is professional, but he came on and said that what he witnessed was George Floyd being put in a blood choke.
Yeah, and that guy, see, this is another thing. I should have asked Gary, who's so sharp, that to have played part of his testimony. The way that guy's testimony was portrayed, and when you watch it, there's really somewhat of a disconnect. People can say, yeah, he was great, this or that. I will tell you that his testimony amongst certain jurors is going to fall flat. I can tell you that based on my experience. The problem with jurors jury trials and trying to get this is the jurors themselves are going to see the participants there day in, day out. So they're either going to like the lawyers, dislike the lawyers. If they like the lawyers and you get a witness who comes in and is kind of a flippant towards the lawyer that they like and thinks that they're scoring points, they're out exit stage left. They're mm-hmm. a bit player. They're a character actor in this movie. And you will find that sometimes that falls incredibly flat with jurors. Unfortunately, it makes great TV.
I was watching a couple of pretty well-known lawyers on CNN a few days ago, and I was just thinking about you the whole time because it's like they take their lawyer hat off and they go into sort of hysterical Karen cheerleader mode. And it's a weird – feels like they're – dropping their fiduciary duty or something. It's like you have a field of expertise. When did you turn into a cheerleader? How does that work?
This is one of the most frustrating things on what I've always called these supersized cases is 20 years ago, I used to call them the bleach blonde former prosecutor crew. Gina does a great imitation of one, my dear friend Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Nancy Grace,
yeah. And Gina's imitation of her is just
Gary, maybe you can find it's the attorney with the long silver hair. He's a famous guy. Can't recall his name. You know what I'm talking about?
No, but
you'd know him. He's a famous sort of TV attorney. He's kind of famous for his long gray hair.
Jerry Spence?
Jerry, I haven't seen in years.
Jerry Spence, he wore the
buckskin fringe
jacket. Yeah, he has the long. It's the another guy. It's the minus buckskin.
Ron Kuby?
No.
I'd have to see a picture.
No, because Ron Kuby's got long hair, but he was
this guy. This guy's 70. No.
Gary's, you'll find him. I wish we had two cameras so you can see Gary showing.
Yeah, you'll find him. I mean, it's not long. It's not down to his, it's not Rita Coolidge long. Just my deep cut for a long-haired person. but it's down to his shoulders.
Yeah, and so when you watch it, it's because, and this is a dangerous prospect.
It's like they're up there and they're going, when he put his knee on the neck of George Floyd, he put his knee on the neck of America. And I'm like, this is not legal commentary.
Right.
And I want to hear some comment. I want to hear your views of the trial.
By the way, there's nobody who I will just keep disclosing this. Ideologically, I'm there. I'm simpatico. I do this for a living. I mean, I just had a hearing this morning on a police killing case where we represent the loved ones who were left behind high and dry. However, this is as scary to me as 20 years ago when you had the former prosecutors who just kind of shirked their duties or responsibilities and just became cheerleaders as well. You can't be the whole idea of journalism is not to be a cheerleader for the prosecution.
All right. I have another case I'm heard about today. Which I was curious
but
about.
First, let me.
All right.
Do you own or rent your home? Funny, we were just talking about this. I'm sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work, right? But except
always
you enjoy
work.
It.
I like work.
Yeah. You know what's easy? I'll tell you what's easy. This is where I come in. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners, your renter's insurance, along with your auto policy. Makes a lot of sense, by the way. Go one-stop shopping, basically. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Right, Adam?
That's all I do.
You got to take a cold dunk. You got to, you know, take Phil for a walk. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. See how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's GEICO.com. Geico. So what was the other case you were going to talk about? That you were.
I'm obsessing over this lawyer that I know we all know, but I can't. Well, Gary will find him.
I'm trying to figure out who it is. But I can't. Like I say, I cannot watch the coverage of it. I go up to C-SPAN and just watch the unfiltered in my chair. And
well, again, there's going to be repercussions because if the media is painting one version of the trial and it's a different version of what's going on inside that courthouse and this guy gets acquitted, America's going to burn down.
Well, the other thing is, you know, if you're a self-styled criminal defense lawyer, your job is.
Yeah, that's him. What's his? Yeah.
Oh, Tom Mesereau.
Tom Mesereau, that's him.
Yeah, right? It's shocking.
He said nothing.
Yeah.
It just, there was no, again, I would like, I have a field of expertise. I'm a carpenter. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you said, well, what's your take on structural integrity? I wouldn't go, glue lamp beams are evil. I'd go, paralams are stronger, glue lamps a little less, dimensional lumber's less than that. If you want to step up the steel, we'll get a little more ceiling height. But I'm not going to go, it's mean. Well, joist hangers are mean.
I was just starting to get into it. The idea is if you're a criminal defense lawyer and you're worried about how you're going to be treated or your popularity, then you need to find another line of work because you're going to have to go against the grain. And the going against the grain means you zealously defend the Constitution. You hold the prosecution to their their duty, burden.
But you're going to have to risk Chelsea Handler not liking you.
Well,
so we need a hero.
Or you know, famously, how many times have you walked in some place around here and they say, oh, that fucking Garrigus defends murderers or something like that, right?
Yeah, everyone, I don't know who they hate more, you or me.
Yeah.
I knew they hate you. That we already know.
Somebody told me the other day that they mentioned my name to a friend of theirs and he said, oh, he's so unethical. He defends criminals. And I said, that's exactly.
That's
and mind you,
job.
this is the guy who said it is a doctor. He's a trained physician. By the way, when he kills somebody on the operating table and they want to charge him with manslaughter, I'm his first call.
Gary, that case out of New York with the two lawyers, the young lawyers and the Molotov cocktail. I don't know if you heard about this. I have. I just heard about it today, but I think they're both.
Is that the Molotov cocktail she's holding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
She did it right in front of a camera?
There's a picture, I think, of her in a cop car with it. And I guess.
With the Molotov cocktail in the cop car?
I don't know. Maybe this is the only picture. I swear I thought I saw a picture of her in a cruiser, but maybe I was looking at a black and white version of this one or something like that. But the point is their attorney. I think they're both attorneys, if I'm not mistaken.
I think
they're
I remember young. Reading about this case. It's in New York. Is it being prosecuted by the Eastern District?
Let me check on that. But it's definitely in New York. She worked for what was described as a white shoe law firm, what was furloughed when COVID started. And he works for a Brooklyn-based criminal defense outfit that's helping the underprivileged.
So they are being asked.
I'm already drawn towards him. because he works for a Brooklyn-based criminal defense. The white shoe firm, she was kind of late to the party.
What's the definition of a white shoe firm?
White shoe firm would be somebody who represents corporations, large, well-heeled style clients. Will not dirty themselves with the underbelly of criminal defense work, that kind of stuff.
So
that's an unlikely – that's kind of a Felix and Odd Couple stuff.
Yeah, Felix and Oscar. Right, yeah. I don't know, Gary, if they burnt the cop car down or they're just attempting to do it.
They definitely tried to throw a Molotov cocktail into an unoccupied police van. I think there's a photo of that van, which might have been what you saw. We're going to put it up.
And
did
they are they detained still in custody?
They may be out on bail waiting to try to settle the case. I'm not positive.
Okay. This is a good case. How did we miss this?
I just sort of caught it on the news this very morning, and they've been offered a plea deal, I think, because they're looking at 45 years, so, you know, potentially maximum. But I don't know the deal they were offered. Gary can see if he can find it. So, you know, my question was, as soon as I heard about this, I said, well, if Mark was defending these two, and it sounds like the kind of case Mark might take.
Yeah, I might take a case like this. This is very attractive.
Would you be looking to take the plea deal?
It depends. I mean, you know, you have to know what the facts are. And I obviously, in terms of a plea deal, you have to analyze it. You have to do everything that you kind of a factual investigation. If she's holding the Molotov cocktail, that's a bad fact.
Yeah. You know, it's a weird thing. There's 330 million Americans. And we all look so uniquely like ourselves that you can't go, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
That's some 27-year-old bitch. I don't know who the fuck that is. I admit our eyes look alike, but that's about it.
You know, that's a facial recognition.
Well, I don't know if it's insane, but like there is an argument to just go, that's not me. Yeah, she looks a lot like me, but I know.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that, because have you noticed in the January 6th photos that they've taken some of the photos of people, they've blown them up, they've pixelated them, and it's the same thing. You say, wow, how did they pick this person out of a crowd and say that this is that? And it's usually like a sliver of a side of a profile, you know what I mean? And they've made IDs and nobody's challenging the IDs.
So they face upwards of 45 years in jail apiece. They've been on home confinement since June. They were offered a plea deal in February that the details have been kept sealed. And on Thursday of this week, so yesterday, a judge gave them 90 days to decide.
Yeah, that sounds like a
– on the plea deal,
that
correct.
Sounds like a mental defense to me. Just – but I don't know enough about it. I'll get up to speed by next week. But that's a very – that's a very interesting case. If they take a plea deal, their careers are flushed. They're done. And so I'm sure that's a collateral consequence that they're thinking about.
So you take a plea deal, you have no – I mean, you could be a welder, take a plea deal, but you can't be an attorney and take a plea deal.
Yeah, there's always – you always – especially on – this is a federal prosecution. Look at that. What firm is he with, does it say?
She is – give me one second to make that correct.
Then now you have to.
So the collateral consequences are something that in the federal system, and these are in the federal system apparently, that does you take into account. That can be a factor, a sentencing factor, that if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a licensed professional of some kind, that the conviction will then cause you to lose your profession. That's what's called a collateral consequence.
So she is an associate at Prior Cashman, and he is a tenants attorney in a Brooklyn housing court.
Wow.
Bronx housing court.
Okay. So he's, you know, I guess she's got the bigger lift. She goes from Prior Cashman to accused defendant. That's a long a tenant's rights attorney. That's not as big a lift. That's somebody who's been going up against the man and probably.
Will they factor that in? Will they go like, well, this is kind of consistent with who this guy is. He's fighting the power.
You know, it's an interesting question because it really depends on who the judge is. Because if the judge swings ideologically one way or another, the way they view the person sometimes is affected by that. If you've got a justice is supposed to be blind. It never is, because everybody comes with their own set of biases and baggage. And some people would say would look at the prior Cashman lawyer. I can see judges who would say, you threw it all away. I'm going to hit you a little harder. I can see others who might have more empathy because, oh, you threw it all away. You obviously were swayed and caught up in the moment.
Might there be a – I'm always interested in how other things affect other things. So might the judge feel pressure, because if Chewbacca Man is still incarcerated – and you give these guys a slap on the wrist, then everyone's going to go, oh, great. So you don't care when they attack law enforcement, but you go in the Capitol, and this guy can never be let out of prison. You know, is there sort of that? Because we're cracking down on groups in this society for sure. And then the right is saying, yeah, but you guys give a shit when they're burning down the Payless shoes. Yeah, those guys are all just running the streets right now.
You know, it's interesting because I think that what I call Article III judges, or what most people call Article III judges, which are district court judges, there's been for 40 years, there's been a whole discussion about, first there were mandatory sentencing guidelines, then they were relaxed, meaning the motivation is always like, we want to treat equal people equally across the spectrum. But it became that you had taken away judges' discretion. Now judges have discretion. But the way the laws are written, a lot of times, not necessarily, I can't speak to this particular situation, but I've seen others where the judges talk about the disparity, where if you're charged with a crime in federal court, the same crime in state court, you get treated a lot more or a lot better, and that you get hammered if you're in federal court. And then the judges – and one of the things you do in a sentencing is you will take kind of – you will gather sentences across the country that are either published or unpublished, and you will show them to the judge and say, here's a factual situation in Iowa. Here's one in Nevada. Judge, you know, this is – our case is either worse or better than that one. This is where you should fall in what they call the heartland of
– hey, Gary, if you can find any of Mesereau on CNN
– I'm downloading it now. Give me about 3 minutes,
make
please.
Make me laugh. But it's also interesting that these guys are attorneys and how they sort of acted with impunity. Like, you know, they weren't wearing stockings on their heads or anything. They were just sort of – you know, out and about, posing for the camera sort of thing. Like, it's weird, and I think it speaks to the zeitgeist. It was such a crazy time with COVID and Black Lives Matter that everyone just sort of went, fuck it, it's a free-for-all. Like, we'll just go do whatever we want. Like, there will be no repercussions.
Well, I completely understand the urge to the kind of nihilistic urge at a certain point, because you're an observer of the human condition. You've got COVID, you've got kind of this lockdown, and then you see a tape, and the tape is horrifying, and you feel like cops never get held accountable. And by the way, they by and large, they never do get held accountable.
How big an argument then is, sorry for cutting you off, of if I'm the attorney defense, I'm saying these people would never engage in this behavior had it not been for all these circumstances.
That's what I'm saying. There's a mental defense to some degree. And oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And this is – there's Ashley Banfield.
Oh, yeah. I was on the show.
Were you?
I knew I saw it somewhere. You know where I saw it? I saw it on my Zoom.
You were watching it on the show.
Because I was coming up next. Yeah.
That's funny you say that, because she just reached out. I just spoke to Ashley. So,
all right, we'll play it.
So, Tom Mesereau, do you feel that same notion could play out this time around?
Well, first of all, you have to look at our criminal justice system in a historical context. A lot of people don't know or have forgotten the history of our criminal justice system as applied to African Americans. There was a time in American history where a black person could not testify against a white person. There was a time in American history where if a black killed a black person, it was considered a misdemeanor. If a white killed a black person, it was considered a misdemeanor. But if a black killed a white person, it was called a felony.
All right, thanks for the history lesson, professor.
There was a time in
professor.
American history
Get
where it was a capital
case.
Crime if you taught a black person to read. Blacks were not allowed to be on juries. So we have a long history of devaluing black people in many different ways in the system. And you fast forward to today. There are a lot of people, particularly in the African-American community, who've seen that tape. It's torturous. It's sadistic. It's cruel. It's monstrous. And they want to see if a jury is going to hold a white police officer accountable for the way he devalued and tortured a black person as seen on tape. Now, yes, trials are more than one piece of evidence. Trials are many different ingredients. And jurors can be complicated as people. They can consciously believe they'll be fair, but they can subconsciously favor police, fear police. Who knows? People run the gamut of types and complexity. I think our system is on trial. I think the question of whether we can be fair to this, to George Floyd, and place him with the same value as any other American citizen, I think it's all on trial. And the defense certainly has a tough job with that tape. They're going to say there's a lot more to the story. They're going to show training manuals, and they're going to have expert witnesses say we can't figure out the cause of death precisely, and they're going to try and sow as much reasonable doubt as they can. That's what the defense lawyer's job is. But in the end, I think this is a historical period in American history where our system is on trial.
Our system's on trial.
You know,
I didn't see him taking any notes.
Yeah.
Mark. Do you understand there's more than one piece of evidence in a trial?
It's just,
Do you know that?
You know what my father used to say, who was a prosecutor? He used to say, if you want to send a message, use Western Union. And nobody knows what that means anymore, except maybe you and me. But he also used to talk about Charlie McCarthy and the ventriloquist dummy.
Your dad,
my dad. That's great.
Candace
In
Bergen's
fact,
dad.
Why do they have trial attorney under there? They should just put social commentator.
Well, the first
that was not that. I mean, talk about denigrate what the defense lawyer is supposed to do. No, the defense lawyer is supposed to zealously defend the client. The defense lawyer is supposed to hold the prosecution to their burden. Period. End of story. You're not supposed to be embarrassed about it. You're not supposed to be feeding the Christians to the lions. I mean, it's just it. People get caught up in this. And I love cops getting convicted as much as the next guy when they're outrageous. And was it torturous? Yes, obviously. Was it excessive? Yes, obviously. However, that is not what the trial is supposed to be. The trial is supposed to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you believe that there was a homicide, and by the way, that is up for discussion, and the defense lawyer would be ineffective as a matter of law if he did not challenge whether or not that was whether that was the cause of death.
Let's shift gears to Tin Horn Flats.
Do you even believe what's happening here? I mean, once again, here's another thing. The same people who will cheer me on for representation of one client will now don't know what to do because I'm defending Tin Horn Flats and the insanity. And that, there's no other term for it. It's insane what has happened here. For those who don't know, the Tin Horn Flats. The owner you went to high school with, correct?
LePagian, yeah.
Yeah.
My grade.
Fellow Armo.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of an honorary Armo.
I'd like to think that I've been sort of grandfathered or kissed into the –
Yeah, Carolian.
To the culture.
Carolian. Somewhere along the line, one of your ancestors dropped the IAN. Yeah. And so
– Adam's been known to shout a no. You
know, no. Or Vudge, 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 Vudge. Yeah. And so they had the temerity when outdoor dining was closed to let people pick up their food and eat on their patio.
I did it.
Yeah.
I took Sonny there.
Right. Okay.
And it's I will kind of describe the scene. The place is kind of a honky-tonk. It's a Burbank fixture for 40 years. It's been sort of family-run for many years. And the outdoors was socially distanced with an outdoor patio in the back and some music playing. No different than eating fast food and standing in the parking lot.
Well, by the way, go to the Grove. During this entire time, you could buy food at the Grove. You could go and sit at a table or in a circle on the grass.
That's what it is.
Absolutely no difference. None whatsoever, except the Grove is a large entity, just like Walmart's a large entity, but the
They got some political juice. Right.
Or like Pineapple Hill and Angela, where she shut down 25 feet away the Hollywood production company can work. Okay. And our judicial giants have decided under the COVID constitution, we defer to the emergency powers, which, by the way, emergency has now been stretched to over 1 year anniversary.
Right. So Tinhorn Flats remained open, and then the Burbank City Council got involved.
Yeah. The county health department, one of my favorites, we do a county health hearing. In the county health hearing, I say during the time period when you're trying to cite them, there was a superior court judge, Judge Chalfant, who had issued an order saying you had no science or data during that 1 week period of time, and he had restrained you. You tried to enforce the county ordinance, not the state, which was in effect, and therefore my client had a good faith belief that they were operating legally outdoors because a superior court judge found that there was no data or science. So that's the argument. County health officer says, mind you, in this hearing, there are two lawyers, not one, but two lawyers from county counsel's office. I make my final argument. They then issue an order that says, we're not going to address the legal issues Mr. Garrigus raised because that's legal and I'm a county health officer. And I said, well, wait a second. You had two lawyers there. What were they there for? Just burning county time?
Cash,
so that's it. So the Burbank City Council says, you don't have a health permit from the county. We're going to revoke your conditional use permit. You can't be in business. Alex, who did the hearing with the Burbank, said, well, wait a second. They had a good faith belief that the judge said there was no data on outdoor dining and they had been restrained and it was the Court of Appeal hadn't ruled yet. One of this there's a guy, Constantine Anthony or something on the this clown goes, I don't care what an L.A. Superior Court judge says. Well, wait a second. You're the one who went down to L.A. Superior Court. You had to, the city attorney go down there. You don't care. So this guy, Constantine Anthony, who is – I mean, you have to watch it. He talks about Rosa Parks. He talks about everything else. He's really something. If there was ever a guy who needed to be recalled, he would be the guy.
Yeah.
But that they do that. Then fast forward to yesterday, they board up the place. The sheriff
Shut the electricity first.
Right. So they brought in generators.
Right. So then they board it up. But this is where they're spending their calories.
Yeah.
They're burning calories on small businesses who've defied them over something that has no political no scientific.
No scientific. There's nobody who's ever said there's any scientific basis for this. In fact, if you look, you want data? I'll give you data. They shut down outdoor dining on November 25th. The next 6 weeks, we surged. That was where that you want to talk about the data. That's the data. It's irrebuttable.
You know, it's crazy. I talk to Drew about this all the time. There is no evidence of outdoor transmission.
None
at all. And then he sends me these TikTok videos of virologists saying masked outdoors are utter waste of time. I walked our horse trail in between our houses the other day. Mask wearing is up 61%.
Yeah.
I did not pass a human being with the sun shining and the wind blowing on that trail that was not masked up. What is up, Mark? How malleable is everybody? What is going on?
Three times a Superior Court judge issued an order to show cause to the county. Give me anything that shows outdoor dining. You know the one piece of evidence they gave? They said, well, people will laugh or shout. By the way, I still can't turn a TV on outdoors. That's still the law in the county of Los Angeles. They cited an anecdotal story in Wuhan of somebody who claims he was outdoors and then he tested positive. That's the evidence.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Okay. I can cite court interpreters who have died in L.A. Superior Court after contracting COVID in the courthouse. That was their vector. That's what I call data. Two people who died, two interpreters.
Well, nobody dies outdoors from COVID. But as I've said to Drew, they do get hit by cars on occasion. So I shall decree that everyone has to wear an orange traffic cone on top of their head with a fucking chin strap before they leave the house. If you want to walk through La Cañada, you have a much greater chance of getting hit by a car going down the street than you do of catching COVID.
Tell me about it. By the way, COVID is still only the third leading cause of death. You know, I mean, we haven't talked about that at all. Third leading. Why don't we start talking about heart disease? Why don't we start? I've said from day one, and as you know it, you've said it, this is the Vinny virus. They just came out this week. 80% of the hospitalizations. Do you know what the factor is? Obesity. Yeah. 80%.
Well, I was looking at stuff about, you know, the real, as I talked to Drew about this as well, excess deaths. That's how you tell what a virus is. Excess deaths. We did like 2.8 in 2017 and like 2.8 and change in 2018. And basically what we're at is we're sort of like 2.8 and it ticks up a little every year, non-COVID years. It'll go up 20,000. It'll go up 27,000. You know, just as the population grows, it ticks up. They vary. We're up 57,000 this year. In 2020, it's 57,000. But you should back out 20,000 because it ticks up about 20 from the prior three or four years. That's not 550,000. That's 37,000. The news wants it at 550.
Pasadena has gone a week without one death. Guess why? Because Pasadena's dashboard is actually not misleading. You can look at Pasadena's dashboard and you see all the way along that the percentage of deaths associated with assisted living facilities hovered between 68% and 80%. So guess why there's no death 7 days in a row? Because they went and vaccinated assisted living facilities. And guess what happened? All of a sudden, you don't have the hospitalizations or deaths. And by the way, people die in their 90s. That happens.
I know. All right. Let me hit Noon Sport here. Noon Sport makes your water work harder. It's hydration you can actually feel. Optimized for hydration and mineral replenishment. And you can do it before, during, and after workout. Just drop a fizzy tablet in your water bottle and supplement your hydration anytime, anywhere. Only 1 gram of sugar and clean ingredients. And it's all certified, non-GMO, gluten-free, and vegan as well. There's 13 delicious flavors, including the fan favorite cherry limeade, which also has an extra boost of caffeine. So if you're going to be working out, you want to take this Noon Sport. You want to put it in that bottle, shake it up a little, and take it before, take it during, and take it after. To get the hydration you need to hit your goals, visit Noon. That's N-U-U-N, noonlife.com, and you can get 20% off your first order. Well, so much more to talk about. We'll do it on our next episode.
We may even do a surprise little
supplementary one.
Right.
Okay.
Right. A supplemental motion or supplemental quarter hour of the universe.
Oh, I'm going to Nashville, Tennessee, Zanies, April 14th.
I think you may be on Big Boy when you go there.
That'd be so awesome.
April 14th. What day you have to leave to get? You want to go there that day or the day before?
We'd like to go that day.
The 14th. I'm Big Boy.
We could probably go the day before.
Yeah.
Well, whatever you want. Okay. Your plane.
What day of the week is 14th?
I think Wednesday. It's a Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay.
Where are you going? Are you going to New York?
No, I'm going to be in West Virginia. I've got part of the crew is coming back to LA for an appearance. Then they're coming back through Nashville dropping you, I think, and then grabbing me.
Oh, it's going to be on. Oh, you won't be with us on the flight?
On the way back.
Oh, no. I think we're flying back somewhere else.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Shit, man.
Okay. I may have to change things around so I'm with you on the flight.
Well, we'll see. We're going on to Florida.
Are you?
From Nashville.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Going to Tucker's house.
Isn't he in the hinterland somewhere?
He's way the hell off the grid. And I'm sure that's
speaking
about
of off the grid,
it.
Boy, you know, we can talk about Matt Gaetz. He threw Matt Gaetz off the grid.
Oh,
didn't
that
he?
Was crazy. Yeah, we'll get into all that. Anyway, okay. Go to AmCarolla.com and you'll see where I'm doing live shows everywhere. And you can check out our Pluto TV channel 585 with all the stuff on it. Mark, what do you got?
I got, look, we're open. Prova in the Grand Central Terminal. Come by. Prova, Moxie Times Square, V Palm Springs. I was there. They had to send a SEAL team to extract me from the place because I never wanted to leave. Ask Gary. The Casa Tropicana in San Clemente is fantastic. Stop by there. And, coming in about 2 weeks, we're opening up Capri in the Hamptons. So come over there and be hoity-toity.
So until next time, Adam Carolla from Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Carolla Digital.